SiriusXM Radio is better with Bogle Wines. 70s on 7, 80s on 8, better with Bogle. Alt Nation, Hip Hop Nation, Hair Nation, better with Bogle. Madison, Howard, Andy Cohen, better, better, better. Y2 Country, Prime Country, Carrie's Country, yep, all better. The Beatles Channel is better, and getting better all the time. Everything on Sirius is better with Bogle. Award-winning, family-owned wines ranked as some of the finest available for around $10. As long as you're not driving, it's better with Bogle. Bogle Family Vineyards, Clarksburg, California. Please drink responsibly.
For over 130 years, McCormick has helped you make mom's lasagna to keep her secret recipe alive. Take over taco night. No matter how chaotic your day is, conquer the bake sale, even if you get to it last minute. And craft the perfect Sunday brunch when it's not even Sunday. Because with McCormick by your side, it's gonna be great.
Hi, I'm Anna Marie Cox, and welcome to With Friends Like These. This week, I am talking to British comedy actress Daisy Haggard. Among other things, she's the creator, co-writer, and star of Showtime's Back to Life, now in its second season. It has a 100% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, where reviewers have called it near perfect, exceptional, and both extremely funny and tragically sad. Also, season two improves on season one in every way. Now, these reviews aren't that surprising, given that the show comes from the same producing team as Fleabag, and it somehow combines elements of almost every hit prestige series over the last few years. It's a true crime-ish seaside town mystery with trenchant social commentary and dark comedy. It is a show about Mary, a 40-year-old woman returning to her hometown in the UK after serving an 18-year prison sentence. But that's not what the show is really about. It's about forgiveness and memory, sex and getting old, and specifically, what it's like to re-enter this fast-moving world after you've paid your debt to society. What does it take to start over? And is starting over even possible? I'll discuss all that and more with actress Daisy Haggard. Daisy, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So right off the top, my first question is, what inspired this show? It's a really specific plot line.
So a lot of things inspired this show. On a very basic level, I was living at home with my parents. So I had, you know, in my mid-30s, staying with my mum and dad, being kind of made to feel like a teenager again. And being told how to load a dishwasher. So that was one aspect. And then another aspect of it was that I've always been really interested in how, and we vilify women who commit crimes compared to, I think, how we maybe perceive or sort of our views towards men. I just think there's a sort of expectation for women to be an angel or the devil. And so I've always been really fascinated by that. Not to say that people don't do terrible things, but just the sort of, I just thought it was, we have an interesting attitude towards that. And so it all came out really with me thinking, what would it be like if you were a woman in your 30s with no job, no partner, when everyone kind of expects you to have all those things, but then also you had done something really terrible? How hard would that make your life? And so that sort of inspired something that doesn't really sound like a comedy, but kind of is.
I have questions about what kind of show it is, actually.
Yeah.
On some level, it actually mashes up all of the most favorite genres from prestige TV these days. You know, like it's kind of like a true crime mystery. It's a seaside mystery. It's a female-centered comedy that's has a lot of, let's say, honest sex in it.
Yeah.
And it has a lot of social commentary.
Yeah.
And it is both, I say this with love, uncomfortable to watch. And yes, occasionally hysterically funny, but you're really writing a lot of different tones there.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely its own tone, I think. And it was never a sort of cynical move. That's just because I believe that's what life's like. You know, I've been around the bed of somebody dying and we've all something very funny has happened, and I've been in situation, you know, I believe that the reality is that you move through with the tones in life, don't you? You suddenly you slip on a banana skin after breaking up with a boyfriend, or you know, like anything can happen. And so I really you know, was desperate to write something that just was bold and confidently all the different things. If that was truthful and right for the story, then that was what we would do.
Was there a specific case you were thinking about when you thought about Mary's life story?
No, there wasn't actually. I think I just noticed a few different things. I suppose I saw all the headlines saying Foxy Noxy about Amanda Knox, mm-hmm. and thought, gosh, they wouldn't do that about a guy, you know. Whatever, you know, regardless of the thing, it was just like, why are we saying Foxy Noxy? You know? So I suppose things like that inspired the fact that the photograph in the season one of me that we chose for the newspaper photograph was a sort of posing with your teenage friends, looking, trying to be sexy photo, because I thought that's what the media would do in that situation. But yeah, so that was really it. And then it was also those stories you hear when you're growing up. I don't know if you had that, but I feel like there's always those stories, the sort of terrible stories that happen about sort of somebody who's 18 or 19 and something happens, somebody gets in a car with someone who's drinking or something awful. And these people, you know, everybody, there's always somebody at your school or somebody's friend of a friend, sort of tragic stories that kind of haunt you through your life. So that's something I've always thought about, because there was somebody we knew when we were young who had a terrible accident that was due to somebody else making a mistake. So those things are sort of part of you, aren't they? That, you know, they stay in your head, they're sort of quite formative. So it was more that. And it's a big old mishmash of things.
I don't know if you specifically chose 18 for Mary's age, but I've been thinking about it, and it's a real specific marker in our culture, right? Like, yeah. 18 is supposedly when you become an adult.
Yeah.
There's a big difference when we think about 17 and we think about 18. So to have her commit this crime at 18, it's this place where she's almost a child, right?
Yeah.
And we might offer more forgiveness to someone who just happened to be a few days younger.
Yeah. And also it's the point where I think for me, where I feel like my life began, really. Like, I wasn't happy at school. So when I left school, I went, oh, this is life. You know, this is so much easier than that school thing. So I think that was probably a significant part of that decision. Was it's just as you're about to launch into this chapter, this thing happens, and then you don't get to do that or live that.
And you talked about how you were living at home, and that's one of the things you were thinking about as a grown person living at home, what the experience is of having to kind of renegotiate your boundaries with your parents. I'm curious if there was anything that you could bring to the other part of Mary's experience, which is this intense boundary that she has with the world at large, right? Like, having to cross into society and re-relate to everything. Now, I know you didn't spend 18 years in prison, but what are things that you drew from to kind of get to that?
Well, I mean, beyond just sort of as a writer having fun with some of that, thinking, you know, what would be really strange now? You know, what is weird? So closing your eyes and thinking back to when you were 19, and you know, how now everyone's just walking along the road staring at their phone. You know, what are the things that you would be like, God, that's just not like, you know, it's completely different. So those things were always just really sort of fun to sort of close your eyes and think about. Do you know what I mean? Whether it be that your idol, although she would have known her idols have died, it's not like she's been in a time capsule, she's been in prison. It's, you know, enjoying those moments and things that you would miss out on as much as you making a comment on the world, like the fact that, you know, she says, why is everyone so obsessed with their phones? And, you know, and she's slightly attached to some of her teenage memorabilia. So yeah, those things were just like me and Laura Solon had a lovely, enjoyed just sort of discussing and thinking about that. And obviously there's a bit of creative license with that, because people in prison do not, you know, as I said, they are in the world. They're not yes. entirely removed from the world, but you can have a bit of fun with finding your crimper again on the other side. And we spoke to women who'd been in prison and people who'd been in prison and actually asked sort of simple questions like, you know, what did it feel like? What was the hardest thing or the strangest thing? And one woman was really interesting about clothes. She said that she was so thrown off by clothes for about a year after coming back, because she was so used to the few items that she wore that the choice really threw her. And also she, like Miri, had the choice that she left that was 10 years ago, you know, that was her choice. She didn't have any money. So the clothes she had were the clothes she'd had when she'd gone to prison. So things like that, we enjoyed bringing into the show to make it feel more real, I think.
And I guess I have to ask about another thing you might've drawn from or had personal experience with, which is, have you ever cut your own bangs?
Yes.
And if so, what was the result?
Exactly as in the show. I very, very stupidly decided to cut my own bangs, but not look, my mirror was offset from my sink for my basin. So I basically leant over the basin, cut, and then looked in the mirror, screamed, and then went back and did it again. I don't know why. I didn't know I was so kind of cleanly, but I did that. And then every time I looked back, it was horrendous. And I basically did exactly what Miri did.
And did you actually cut your bangs for the show? I'm curious. Did you have to walk around
yeah.
with like the micro fringe?
We had a wig in the first season. And in the second season, I just couldn't, I couldn't be bothered to be in makeup for that long, because I wanted to put my kids to bed and let everyone go home early. So I said, come on, guys, let's do it. Just make me look ridiculous. I'll look ridiculous for 6 weeks. And at the school gates, I got some brilliant looks. So, yeah.
I kind of want to go back to the emotional kind of reentry that Miri has, because that's, I think, the texture of the show for me. And I feel like it's relatable for all of us, even though obviously very few of us have had Miri's experience.
Yeah, I think that it is relatable, isn't it? Because Miri's sort of she's the underdog, right? And she's an innocent in a sense. And I think that's what's relatable maybe with her. She's an optimist and an innocent, and she's trying her best in a world that doesn't really, you know, that's not making it easy for her. So anyone who's not a winner, you know, kind of person relates to Miri. I relate to Miri. She's someone who's just like, I'm going to have a go. I'm going to dip my toe in. And then she gets hurt, but she pulls it, but she gets back up again, and she goes in, and, you know, she's a fighter really, but she's definitely, you know, it is fundamentally a show about hope, I think, and forgiveness, and she's an adult beginner, which I think we can all feel like, right? We don't all, you know, unless you're some kind of amazing machine person, which I'm definitely not, you know, you constantly feel like, ooh, hello, here I am, you know, and Miri's like that. But she's got this sort of energy and optimism, which I think hopefully makes her relatable, and it makes you want her to succeed.
Oh, you definitely want her to succeed. And I think the other thing, I think this is what you're saying, which is we've all had the experience of trying to enter into just even a small society that's new.
Yeah, like a new
right?
job.
Mm-hmm. And it can feel just as alienating or just as scary.
Yeah.
You don't know the rules, you know. I wonder, are you like that? Like Miri, are you an optimist? Do you dip your toe in and then keep going?
Yeah, I have a big cry though. You know, I'm not like, I'm an optimist who can go, oh, that didn't work out. and then I seem to come back again, if that makes sense. So I'm not an optimist, but I'm not unemotional or sort of brazenly strong or anything. I'm an emotional optimist.
With Friends Like These is brought to you by Magic Spoon. You might think that getting more protein into your diet means either eating a lot of red meat or drinking chalky protein shakes, but it does not. You can get your protein at breakfast or anytime with Magic Spoon cereal. Enjoy the taste from your childhood and getting a grown-up dose of protein all at the same time. Magic Spoon cereal has 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and only 4 net grams of carbs in each serving, along with just 140 calories. It is keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, soy-free, and low-carb. Also, you can build your own box with the mini flavors that they have: cocoa, fruity, frosted, peanut butter, blueberry, cinnamon, cookies and cream, and maple waffle. Magic Spoon brought back cookies and cream and maple waffle permanently. Now, when they were limited flavors, they sold out extremely quickly. So now's the time to try them yourself. I personally prefer eating Magic Spoon straight out of the box while binging on a TV show. It's a really good form of self-care. Go to magicspoon.com/WFLT to grab a custom bundle of cereal and try it today. Be sure to use our promo code WFLT at checkout to save $5 off your order. Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. If you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember, get your next delicious bowl of guilt-free cereal at magicspoon.com/WFLT and use code WFLT to save $5. And we thank Magic Spoon for sponsoring this episode. With Friends Like These is brought to you by WordTune. Every year, U.S. businesses waste over $400 billion. That's $400 billion. Because bad writing causes confusion, misses the mark, or just takes too long to get to the point. Better writing can help you save money. Smooth and clear writing wins over and impresses customers, enhances brand perception, improves internal communication, and strengthens relationships with critical partners. Better writing means better business, which is why your team needs WordTune for Teams. I'm excited to announce a fantastic deal. Right now, WordTune Teams is 50% off for our listeners who want to improve the writing of their whole team. That's 50% off. I have used WordTune on some of the ads in this show because, I'll tell you a secret, the ads are not always fully written when they get to me. They need a tune-up. WordTune gives me a snappier copy for ads, and I also occasionally use it for work email, so I get the more formal tone that I sometimes slip out of, but is good for boundaries. WordTune makes your writing more efficient and reduces misunderstandings. When can your team use WordTune? WordTune improves the performance of any project, from internal emails and press releases to sales outreach and customer service support. You can use WordTune anywhere you're writing online, including Google Docs, Slack, Outlook Web, and WhatsApp. And right now, my listeners can get 50% off WordTune for Teams at wordtune.com/friends. You can try WordTune for free at wordtune.com/friends, but this 50% discount is only available for a limited time and only available to teams. You may never see a discount like this again. Your team can start writing better right away for 50% off. That's half price. wordtune.com/friends. With Friends Like These is brought to you by Made For. A lot of the time, the promises we make to ourselves are the hardest to keep. Even the stuff we know is good for us, we don't make time for. But what if you could make the things that are good for you a habit rather than a goal? Made For is a better way to create new habits that benefit your body and your mind. Each month, you receive a kit with a 21-day challenge with one small action to do every day that you can easily integrate into your normal routine. No apps, screens, or devices required. These simple tasks shift your mindset and behaviors slowly over time, so you actually stick to your new habits long term. Made For uses neuroscience and positive psychology to support positive habits around gratitude, mental clarity, movement, and so much more. Focus on one theme each month to help achieve your fullest, happiest life over the course of 10 months. It's the wellness program you only need to do once. See results that last a lifetime with Made For. And right now, Made For is offering our listeners 50% off your order with promo code FRIENDS. Payment is flexible. This promotion applies whether you order an intro box or the full program. Go to getmadefor.com and take control of your well-being. Use promo code FRIENDS at checkout for 15% off. That's getmadefor.com, promo code FRIENDS.
SiriusXM Radio is better with Bogle Wines. 70s on 7, 80s on 8, better with Bogle. Alt Nation, Hip Hop Nation, Hair Nation, better with Bogle, Madison, Howard, Andy Cohen, better, better, better. Y2 Country, Prime Country, Carrie's Country, yep, all better. The Beatles Channel is better, and getting better all the time. Everything on Sirius is better with Bogle. Award-winning, family-owned wines ranked as some of the finest available for around $10. As long as you're not driving, It's better with Bogle. Bogle Family Vineyards, Clarksburg, California. Please drink responsibly.
For over 130 years, McCormick has helped you make mom's lasagna to keep her secret recipe alive. Take over taco night. No matter how chaotic your day is, conquer the bake sale, even if you get to it last minute, and craft the perfect Sunday brunch when it's not even Sunday. Because with McCormick by your side, it's gonna be great.
I do want to talk about some other characters on the show that kind of round out our experience of this town and help, you know, illuminate what Miri's experience is. Her parents are... Now, I don't know if there's a stereotype about what parents would be like for someone that has just been released from incarceration, but they're not that. Whatever I thought.
Yeah.
Whatever I thought they would be. You know, Oscar is a righteous environmentalist, kind of passionate even, slight spoiler alert for passion, and a little in his own head, right?
Yeah.
And Caroline is her mother, and I think I'm not spoiling anything to say she's having an affair with Miri's high school boyfriend.
Yeah, like, in the first season. Yeah, that's what she's doing.
Yeah, so some unusual circumstance, right?
Yeah.
And I wonder, like, the pieces that are in play there. I think Caroline is the most interesting one to me.
Mm.
Because, how do I say this? It's not that she's not sympathetic. I care about everyone on the show. But she's a tough love, let's say.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. She's very selfish, isn't she? She behaves in a selfish, extremely selfish way.
I guess part of me wonders, you know, you're a woman and this show is largely created by women. And to put kind of an unsympathetic female character in there, like, I always appreciate it when women do that because I think there's more subtlety there.
I mean, I love Caroline, and I love that she's the sexual character of the show. You know, she's the one who's got...
I was going to bring that up too.
She's got a voracious appetite. You know, everyone would expect it to be me, you know, but actually Miri's really sort of a total innocent, and her mum, you know, wants sexual satisfaction in her life, and she's, you know, disconnected emotionally, I think, and she hasn't got a purpose, and so her purpose has been about her sexual identity, really, and how to feel, you know, her way of dealing with everything has been to sort of seek pleasure elsewhere. And so the whole, over the span of two seasons, we see her kind of grow up. I think we see her find her own identity and sort of figure out who she is and what she wants, because she doesn't really know what she's doing. And it's only when Miri's back that she has to confront really all the things that she's done wrong and who she really is. But yeah, felt really good. Me and Laura felt really excited to write the character that's the voraciously sexual one to be the older woman, and not the older man and not the younger woman. It felt right and it felt important.
And she is very sexy. I will say that.
She's like, gorgeous. Yes,
she carries it off. Like, totally. I'm believing that 30-something, you know, 40-something guy would find her hot. Sure.
Totally.
Like, it's completely wrong. I mean, not the ages, but, you know, like, it's,
yeah.
It's not great morally.
I mean, it's very funny because my dad is compared a lot to Oscar, and my mum said, somebody asked me if I was like Caroline the other day.
Well, I wasn't going to go there about your mom. I am curious about Oscar. Actually feel like Oscar may be a kind of type. I mean, I guess it's interesting to me. He's sort of emotionally distant, but he's also kind of the one of the two of them that seems to have more empathy for Miri's experience.
Yeah, I think Caroline's really angry with Miri for what it took from her life. And that's what comes out in season one. She finally explodes. And that's a brilliant moment, really, because then they can sort of start again, because she actually goes, you know what? Yes. You know, I hated you for what you did, kind of thing. And I think that's really important, because then once that's said, they can sort of, she kind of, Miri's grateful, because it's like, well, now you finally, there's less repression in this house. You've just shouted and cried and told me you hate me. That's much, much more constructive than bottling everything up. But Oscar is, you know, Oscar is quite, I think he's able to switch off his emotions. But yeah, he puts it all into the environment, doesn't he?
All of it. Yeah, all of it. You know, I could ask about each individual character because I am curious and I care about all of them, but I want to know more about the creation of the show, because this is your baby. Like, you created it, you write it, you're in it. What has that experience been like for you to carry something all that way?
It's been amazing, actually. It's, you know, I look back at the beginning and I think, gosh, it was so, you know, you're trying to find the tone and the shape and all the things. But it's been an amazing experience. And I've been, you know, there's a million people involved in the creation of a show. You know, I'd like to take all the credit, but that would be a complete lie. I'm very selfish and wrong, because the truth of it is there's so many people go into making a show, and you really learn that when you're doing what I've been doing. You really sort of go, oh my goodness, if it wasn't for Chris Sweeney at the beginning when we shot the first taster tape, who sat there patiently with me deciphering my visual, you know, trying to explain what I wanted it to be, and, you know, and then made that happen with the taster tape that got the commission and then the first season. And then, you know, you have Sarah Hammond and two brothers and Harry Williams and all these people who are kind of sitting there like helping you get this idea out. And then when we got the commission, I was 8 months pregnant and just phoned Laura and said I needed someone else on this, because I wanted to do it all myself. And then it became obvious that wasn't going to be beneficial, really. Like, the more clever people you can get in a room, the better. So then Laura stepped in and was just amazing. So from the beginning, it's been this kind of mad and excellent journey of lots of people, really, so too many to name, who just step in, tune in to what you're doing, and then help you get this thing out of your head. And so it's an incredible experience. And like, yeah, I never thought, I didn't think I was going to have that experience either. I'd kind of almost given up. So yeah, it's been amazing.
I want to talk about the almost giving up part.
Well, I just thought, oh, because I'd had my first kid, and I tried to write loads of things, and no one had wanted anything. And I thought, oh, well, you know, oh, here I go, really. I was pushing a pram around the park going, well, I might have missed that moment, you know. And then just plugged on. And also, you know, two brothers amazingly kind of stuck with me and kept saying, no, just keep pitching us ideas. And then one day, you know, I did pitch this idea, which I pitched quite a few strange things to them that they weren't that sure about. And they were like, oh, now this is interesting. And we all had a very aligned, we sat and discussed the tone and how we'd want it to look. And then suddenly that, you know, that's from that little seed. It took 6 years or something from there, but it started to happen. But yeah, I know there were loads of points where I thought, oh, well, I had my shot. So yeah, so just the fact that it's even happened is really like, oh my goodness, I can't believe it. But yeah, and as a woman in film, and, you know, really enjoying with the last season, we sort of suddenly turned around one day and we were like, there's all these amazing women. This is so much, there's all these kind women in charge. This is brilliant. So it's been cool.
Did this idea feel different than others? Because you said you had tried others, you'd pitched a lot of, I think you said, weird or strange things.
Yeah.
But did this feel to you like this is the thing that's going to get made?
Yeah. Well, I felt like when we were talking, because Harry and Sarah, we talked so much about the kind of show we want to make. So we knew our inspiration, you know, we were on the same page tonally, you know, visually, tonally, the kind of things that we really liked. So we talked a lot about that. And this one fitted that in a really lovely way, because it just had this darkness. But what was, I think as a writer, I'm fundamentally a character writer. I'm not a plot writer particularly. I write sort of details and the things I'm obsessed with, are characterful moments and human things and people, whether they're kind or, you know, like there's just the detail that I think I get really caught up in. And the great thing about this idea was that you could actually, you've got the dramatic premises there, and then you can just write relationships, you know. So it did feel right. And then we all talked and developed it, you know, and talked about it for ages together, and it just started to kind of take off. But it took years, you know, these things take so long, you know. At one point, Marie had a brother, and then she didn't have a brother.
I was going to ask about what kind of significant changes happened along the way.
She had a brother, and then I realized that the relationship I was trying to write for the brother was this really like pally relationship. And it was like, everyone kept gently saying she wouldn't have that if she'd been in prison for 18 years. so we had to get rid of the brother, which was sad, but then it was right, because actually that was a crucial thing, because he was one of the big parts really. But then it was this slightly then all the focus is on this only child, and actually it just worked much better for the show.
Are you an only child?
No, I'm one of six.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Wow. And you come from like a showbiz family, right?
Well, my dad's a director. But it's funny, it feels like such an unshowbiz family, because the rest of my family, and when you've got such a big family, and if there's only one of you, it doesn't feel like a showbiz family. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm not a mathematics family. My dad's a mathematician, so it doesn't make a mathematics family. Yeah.
Yes, no, exactly. No, but my dad's a director, but my mum's like an Aussie Australian painter, like sort of stained glass artist and artist, and then everyone else did completely different things. So yeah.
Well, the one thing though about having a family member in any profession, let's say, actually just being close to a profession that's maybe a little outside most people's experience. Like, I know more about math and like university life than most people probably, right?
Yeah.
Like, and you were exposed to scripts. You know, acting in the arts and scripts.
No, totally.
In a way that most people aren't.
Absolutely.
And my question is, did you always want to do that?
Yeah, I wanted to write. And also, you know, I did all my drawings on the back of scripts. That's what I drew on, you know. So we were very arty house. My parents were like, don't watch telly and, you know, just make your own fun, basically. So here's the paper, here's the pens. See you later. So I would do all my drawings on the back of scripts. So I was always reading these pages of scripts. So I kind of grew up with that, I suppose. And I loved writing. So I'd always write short stories and poems and do terrible plays for my family and make them watch them and gym routines. So I think, yeah, I wanted to perform and I wanted to write. But I never got into any school plays or anything.
Okay. Can you tell me anything about these plays that you performed as a child?
Oh, they were so bad. They were fully improvised, no planning. I think I said this the other day in an interview. But I did this play one day because my dad did a film called The Mystery of, My dad did a film called The Blood on Satan's Claw. And it was a bit of a sort of cult kind of Hammer horror film. And we had the claw in the dressing up, you know, big pile of dressing up secondhand clothes. And I used to do plays with the claw. And one of them was called The Mystery of the Scratched Boob. And it was just me going, oh, there's a scratch on my boob. And it went on and on and on. And then one day, my dad just stood up and was like, this is rubbish. It's not going anywhere. You haven't got a good story. You're just talking about scratches on boobs. I'm out. Work on your stories.
With Friends Like These is brought to you by Monk Pack. Healthy snacks have a bad reputation, and let's be honest, most don't taste very good. They don't fill you up, and they certainly don't satisfy your cravings. But this episode is sponsored by Monk Pack, who makes snacks that taste like your favorite sugary treats, but with 1 gram of sugar or less. Monk Pack Keto Granola Bars contain just 1 gram of sugar, 2 to 3 grams of net carbs, and they're only 140 calories. They're gluten-free, grain-free, plant-based, and non-GMO with no soy, trans fat, sugar, alcohols, or high-intensity sweeteners. While they're great for anyone following a keto lifestyle, they're also the perfect snack for anyone who's trying to eat better or cut back on sugar and carbs without sacrificing taste. Monk Pack Keto Granola Bars have a soft and chewy texture and come in delicious flavors like coconut cocoa chip, peanut butter, and blueberry almond vanilla. My favorite thing about them? They don't compensate for having low sugar by loading up on sugar alcohols like a lot of bars do. They don't have an overly sweet chemical aftertaste. They taste like what they're supposed to taste like. They're perfect for a quick breakfast, a snack between Zoom calls, or dessert. They taste incredible, and you can't beat the low sugar nutrition they provide. Ordering online means you can avoid another trip to the grocery store. Sign up for a subscription to your favorite flavors and get 10% off every order. Try it for yourself and you'll see we have a special deal for our listeners. Get 20% off your first purchase of any Monk Pack product by visiting monkpack.com and entering code WFLT at checkout. Monk Pack is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. If you don't like it for any reason, they'll exchange your product or refund your money, whichever you prefer. To get started, go to monkpack.com, and that's MUNKPACK.com, and select any product. Then enter code WFLT at checkout and save 20% off your purchase. Monk Pack, delicious, nutritious food you can count on. And we thank them for sponsoring this podcast. With Friends Like These is brought to you by ZocDoc. When you need a doctor, you need a doctor now. Not in a few days, not in a few weeks, and definitely not in a few months. If you need to see an MD ASAP, there's a solution. Just download the free ZocDoc app, the easiest way to find a great doctor and instantly book an appointment. With ZocDoc, you can search for local doctors who take your insurance, read verified patient reviews, and book an appointment in person or video chat. Never wait on hold with a receptionist again. Whether you need a primary care physician, a dentist, dermatologist, psychiatrist, eye doctor, or another specialist, ZocDoc has you covered. Go to ZocDoc.com/friends and download the ZocDoc app to sign up for free. ZocDoc makes healthcare easy. Now is the time to prioritize your health. Go to ZocDoc.com/friends and download the ZocDoc app to sign up for free and book a top-rated doctor. Many are available as soon as today. That's ZocDoc, ZocDoc.com/friends. With Friends Like These is brought to you by the How to Buy a Home podcast. Buying your first home can feel daunting, unrealistic, and confusing. As I have mentioned before, I bought a house this year in the Austin, Texas real estate market, where houses sell in hours and not days. It was completely nerve-wracking, and I felt like I was both walking on eggshells and on a high wire. I was on an eggshell high wire, which is why I highly recommend listening to the How to Buy a Home podcast. The How to Buy a Home podcast is essentially a free playbook of the do's and don'ts to buying your first home. No matter if you're clueless on how to start or deep in the mess, just looking for clarity, host David Sedoni is an industry insider with years of experience who actually cares about first-time homebuyers and wants to help them beat the system that is rigged against them. He answers questions like, do I really need to put 20% down? The answer is no. Most people only put down 3.5%, and David will tell you how. How much over asking should I offer? Are we in a bubble that is about to burst? How and where do I start? If you're thinking about buying a home next month, next year, or in 5 years, listen to the How to Buy a Home podcast today. This is your best bet to avoid being one of those horror stories and get an insider playbook with clear, no BS, real information. Find How to Buy a Home wherever you listen to podcasts.
SiriusXM Radio is better with Bogle Wines. 70s on 7, 80s on 8, better with Bogle. Alt Nation, Hip Hop Nation, Hair Nation, better with Bogle. Madison, Howard, Andy Cohen, better, better, better. Y2 Country, Prime Country, Carrie's Country, yep, all better. The Beatles channel is better, and getting better all the time. Everything on Sirius is better with Bogle. Award-winning family-owned wines ranked as some of the finest available for around $10. As long as you're not driving, it's better with Bogle. Bogle Family Vineyards, Clarksburg, California. Please drink responsibly.
For over 130 years, McCormick has helped you make mom's lasagna to keep her secret recipe alive. Take over taco night, no matter how chaotic your day is. Conquer the bake sale, even if you get to it last minute. And craft the perfect Sunday brunch when it's not even Sunday. Because with McCormick by your side, it's gonna be great.
How did you come to craft in terms of writing? I mean, I wrote really silly things as a child as well. And there comes a point, you know, when you realize that writing isn't just about expressing yourself.
Totally. You know? It's really hard.
It is.
It is. Yeah. I mean, I wrote loads of things that didn't have any structure. That was my thing. I couldn't do structure at all. And I tell you what, Laura Solon has taught me so much because she was amazing with Back to Life. She totally understood it was my baby and that I was going to be a bit annoying and a bit precious about stuff. So she had no ego about it. But she is so clever and she was such a sister and such a genius. And she's slowly, I feel like by working with her, I've really sort of learned so much about, she'd be like, well, that's not moving forward. And then I'd be like, well, I didn't understand. And then I'd be like, oh, and now I really feel like she taught me so much because she had an understanding of some fundamentals with writing that I just didn't have. You know, I could write a scene, but I couldn't really, you know, and then that, you know, and then I started to find myself thinking in a story and I was like, oh, this is so much better. So it's really hard writing.
It is writing well. Yeah. It's really hard. Yeah. Writing badly is like awesome.
That's fine.
Like,
yeah, that's great. Totally. Yeah.
I wonder if you can give an example of that, the shaping of something from, you know, a creative idea to something that is moving a plot forward. I know that might be hard, but like.
Well, I'm trying to think of an example from the show. I'm trying to think, like, for instance, she figured out quite early that if we planned it too much, I would not do what we planned. So I seem to basically want it to surprise me as much as it would surprise someone else. So there was a moment where we planned something and then I phoned her and said, I've just killed the neighbor. She's just died. And Laura was like, I sometimes saw Laura as like the person, like the forensic, the person coming in to clean up after you've done a murder. She'd be like, all right, Daisy, hand over. I'm going in, put on her gloves. And then she'd help me she'd go, well, you know what? It's funny. It's good. It's surprising. Let's make it work. You know?
That's so interesting because that's one of my favorite scenes, actually.
That was my favorite to write because suddenly I was like, oh, she's dead. It's like, can we do this? Can we get away with it?
How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Fresh start. New beginnings.
Well, it's a lovely day, so.
Isn't it? Crisp. Oh, it's nothing quite like winter sun, is there?
How are you?
Oh, I feel fabulous. Thank you for asking.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Light as a feather, clean as a whistle, inside and out.
Oh.
I do wonder, though, sometimes.
Oh, what do you wonder?
I wonder what it's like being a harlot. Slut. Killer. A man's dealer.
All right, you're obviously having a bad day, so I'm not going to take offence.
Oh, I'm very well, right now. Never been better. Just a woman in her prime taking a good, hard look at a psycho, husband-stealing fuck biscuit, casually bathing her sin in the sun while she should be rotting to death in a prison cell.
Sorry, can you just stop it now? Stop it.
Rot! Rot, rot, dirty little prison killer.
You don't know anything about me. Just leave me alone. Stop being so mean.
You will always be alone. Oh, fuck off and die.
Anna? Anna?
Because it manages to combine a lot of the elements of the show, right? Like the themes of the show, although Miri doesn't talk much during it. Although that is kind of fitting too.
That's fine.
She gets talked at a lot.
Yeah.
And it is a surprise. And it's a scene that evokes a lot of like discomfort, right?
Yeah.
And because the character, I don't want to say too much about it, I guess. Well,
I think it's okay.
Neighbor dies. Spoiler alert for people haven't
seen. That's okay. You don't know which neighbor. You don't know which side.
That's right. But there's the discomfort of feeling empathy for Miri and all the hatred that she's subjected to, right?
Yeah.
And then there's just like, she's an annoying neighbor, like almost a sitcom trope, right?
Yeah.
And then she dies.
And then she just dies dead.
Which is funny when it happens.
Shocking.
But also we go circle around to like Mary's plight, right?
Yeah.
Like it can't be funny for a long time because
it's her.
She's in all this. It's her.
Yeah. And if she's near anybody or anything like that, I mean, I don't know if you've seen the second season, but we make it as hard for Mary as we can possibly make it, you know. We think you give her a hard time in the first one. Oh my gosh. We really do put her through it. But yeah, because there are things that you know that just can't happen near somebody who's been in prison for murder. There's just things that they can't be near to or be part of, because if they are, they're going back in for life and no one's going to believe them. I think so. Yeah, that's what that scene does as well, isn't it?
Yeah. You mentioned that the show's about redemption, and it's about redemption and forgiveness and trust, I think.
Well, people tell me that, and I suppose it's pretty much is, isn't it?
Oh, well, then you tell me what is it
no,
about.
No, no, no. I mean, I think it is. No, I didn't mean it like that. I mean, that I'm not very, when I'm writing, I don't really think, I don't sort of write down themes, if you know what I mean. And then it becomes really apparent that I really care about forgiveness. You know, people are like, God, you really care. And I was like, oh, is it that obvious? Oh, yeah, I suppose I do. I'm just not very analytical. But yeah, I think it is. And I think it's about, you know, second chances and everyone actually in it at some point needs to be forgiven for their behavior, don't they? I suppose it does really, it really is about that. It's pretty much quite heavily about that, whether it's her mother or the ex-boyfriend mm-hmm. or whoever.
Have you ever done something unforgivable?
Well,
you don't have to say what it is.
Yeah, I feel like I really care about not doing something unforgivable, probably to like a crazy degree, if that makes sense. Like I'm obsessed with loyalty. I'm obsessed with all those things. I'm sure I have to somebody, but I can't think of anything. I think if you betray a confidence, I find that's, I've done that before and then felt terrible, you know, because that's not something I do. Do you know what I mean? But I haven't, mm-hmm. Not in the way that Mary has. But yeah, no, I'm sure I have, but I can't, I think I'm probably quite obsessed with not doing unforgivable things. I try and live my life as forgivable as possible. How about you?
Oh, I have, for sure.
There's things sure.
that I've done that I haven't forgiven myself for.
Oh yeah, that's tough, that one.
Yeah. I think that's a lot harder.
Yeah.
And that kind of gets me back to another question about Mary and maybe something that you might want to say something about as well, which is that I think one of the reasons we love her so much is in that optimism, in that I'm going to give it a go, she's actually really forgiving.
Yes.
She's very gracious. She's a accepting. Very gracious person.
I think that's true. She's very accepting of people's flaws. And I think the thing about whether you've not done something unforgivable, that would also relate to how hard you are on yourself, right? So you may be really hard on yourself, so you think what you've done is unforgivable. I may not be, and so I might be like, yeah, I forgive myself everything. It's no, do you know what I mean? It depends on how hard people are on themselves.
Well, you know, what I was going to say is that sometimes, you know, the hardest thing is actually forgiving, right?
Yeah.
Have you ever forgiven someone something that was hard?
Yeah, I have. But then I couldn't, you know, I remember trying to forgive somebody for cheating on me and then finding it and then realizing that although I had sort of forgiven them, I couldn't forgotten it. I couldn't forget, you know, and so I remember feeling kind of sad because I was like, I've really tried, but something's gone now. You know, I've had those moments in life where I've tried to forgive. And then also sometimes someone just does something and I think, oh no, I don't think you're very nice. And then I've gone, oh, I'm tougher than I thought, you know. But yeah, it depends.
And you said you go into this show not really like with huge ideas you want to explore, which I think is a great way to approach storytelling, by the way. Like you're not like, I want to write about forgiveness, right?
You're
writing about a character. I wonder if there's anything that you surprised yourself with as far as the thoughts about forgiveness or about the ways that people hurt each other, the ways that people help each other. Have you learned anything from writing the show besides the nuts and bolts of storytelling, which is super important?
I think that I think I learned, this is going to sound so cheesy, but I think I learned how much I care about kindness. Like, I was like, I really want, you know, and I like, and things having, because even when you're writing something, as you're crafting it, you're like, oh no, that's a bit cruel. I want this to feel warm in the heart of it. And I didn't know how much I cared about that until we were writing it. Does that make any sense? So I didn't want it to be clever and shiny. I was like, oh no, I would choose this being lower key, but with a big, like, in the end, people feeling warmth. And like, I didn't realize how much I cared about that. I would choose that over it being cool any second of the day. I think that's something I felt. And then I think there's probably other things that after a few years, if I watch it again, because I'm too close to it still, that I'll go, oh gosh, that's interesting. I didn't know that, you know? Oh, I was sort of saying that. We were saying that. Why were we saying, you know what I mean? I think that will probably happen.
Do you think you're a kinder person coming out of the other end of two seasons?
I don't know. Or maybe, or maybe it combined with like having kind of, I don't know, wasn't it my kids and suddenly like things in my, so things for me in my head shifting and sort of my, my personal priorities shifting, you know, maybe, but I don't know, but it definitely filled me. I don't know. It definitely made me feel like, oh, I want this show to be really human. I want people to feel, you know, because it's a tough subject. It's lots of things, but I want them to feel like that. I did feel like that. I want them to feel warmth at the end. You know?
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. Thanks.
A big thanks to Daisy Haggard for talking to me and for putting a face on a story of redemption. Again, the show is back to life on Showtime, and the season finale for season 2 is airing on Monday, October 18th. Andy Gardner-Bernstein is our producer. Patrick Antonetti is our audio editor. And please, take care of yourselves.
For over 130 years, McCormick has helped you make mom's lasagna to keep her secret recipe alive. Take over taco night, no matter how chaotic your day is. Conquer the bake sale, even if you get to it last minute. And craft the perfect Sunday brunch when it's not even Sunday. Because with McCormick by your side, it's gonna be great.
Here you are, BPMs high, sweat dripping, body moving, tongue panting. You're working hard, real hard, and you're thirsty. You need vitamins, nutrients for peak performance and energy.
And your plants do too. Aw, I mean, just look at the little guy. Water-soluble plant food from Miracle-Gro is full of essential nutrients. Just a little scoop into your watering can and boom, instant feeding and bigger, more beautiful plants. It's kind of like a sports drink for your plants. You may have to suffer from heat, but your plants do not.